This is Connor Lennon from UN News. Thousands of women and children who remain in arbitrary detention without end in camps in northeast Syria must be helped home to their countries of origin, a top independent rights expert has insisted. In an appeal to well over 50 countries whose nationals are languishing in the Al-Hol and Roy centres because of their alleged links to ISIL extremists, Special Rapporteur Fionnuala Ní Eolain told UN News' Daniel Johnson that many Western European countries could do more to bring them home.
So the scale of the challenge we're facing in northeast Syria is that we have over 64,000 people, mostly women and children, who are being held in camps in northeast Syria, in Al-Hol and Raj camps primarily.
It's been heartbreaking, hasn't it, listening to the grandmothers of those who are still detained in these camps. What are they telling you?
So my mandate has had a lot of engagement with families, including grandmothers. Grandmothers who are literally watching their grandchildren and their daughters starve on cell phones, watching. I've sat with these grandmothers and watched these images, and this is, it's profoundly heartbreaking because more than anything else, they are completely powerless. Their governments are refusing to intervene. And if those grandmothers were to send even packages of food or clothing or even any money to their daughters or their grandchildren to take them out of the extremity of the situation they are in, they would be prosecuted for assisting or giving material support to terrorism in multiple countries.
57 unnamed countries, according to your last press release. Could you be a bit more specific about where these countries are, or is it all regions of the world?
It's across the globe. I mean, we go from A to Y: Afghanistan, Albania, Canada, China, Denmark, Egypt, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Spain, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Tajikistan, the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, the United States, and Yemen. So these are countries that are spread across the globe. But it is notable that there's a really significant number of nationals from Western states, countries who have both the means and the capacity to bring their nationals home and are refusing to do so.
Do you think there's an appetite to bring these people home, though?
So I think you have to create the conditions conducive to bring them home. We, the mandate, I've been in countries where they have been brought home. And the one thing I have seen is that governments are prepared to spend political capital to make the case for children and to accept their responsibilities to women and children. And that requires an act of political will. It requires the language of compassion. It requires the language of comfort. It requires the language of calling children, children. And what's most challenging here is that a number of states, the states who call themselves human rights activists, the states who say they have human rights foreign policies, the states who say that they are feminist in their foreign policies, are not prepared to bring their women and children home. And so that's profoundly disappointing.
Remind me how many foreign nationals are still in these camps. It's several thousand, isn't it?
We're talking about just over 9,000 individuals. And in many cases, in the countries we're talking about a handful of individuals. So some countries will have less than 20 nationals. So there are some countries, I take the example of Russia or Kazakhstan, who've had hundreds of their nationals in these camps. And to be fair to these countries, they've made extraordinary and actually quite heroic efforts to bring back their nationals. By contrast, we see countries with very small numbers actually being unwilling to even entertain the discussion. And these are countries who cannot argue that they don't have the resources, and also at home don't have the social and economic and legal systems to be able to support these families to actually return to be reintegrated into society. So it's the countries with the greatest capacity who are the most delinquent on this issue.
And you said something else that was interesting. You mentioned that some of the non-state armed groups, or the non-state armed groups in northeastern Syria, are keen for these third country nationals to go home, and that they will happily cooperate with states if they want it to happen.
So one thing we are really clear of is that the non-state actor, the de facto authority running these camps, the Syrian Democratic Forces, is anxious and willing and wants to return these third country nationals home. They are both a security and a humanitarian challenge for the non-state actor. The non-state actor has made clear that it will work and cooperate with governments, and I personally have seen that cooperation firsthand. They've made clear that they will support all of the efforts of third country states to get their national homes, including access to the camps, including the kind of preparations that would be required, DNA testing, identifying the necessary families and making the arrangements, whether with humanitarians or other states, to enable them to depart. So there's no issue here that these individuals can't be cooperatively repatriated. That is clear. What is also equally clear is the unwillingness of states to do it.
So as the Special Rapporteur on this issue, in fact, to give you your full title, Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of Human Rights While Countering Terrorism, your work involves reporting back to the Human Rights Council, and you will be talking to them at the next session, I believe. What is it that you're going to tell them, and what is it that you are hoping that they will do?
So in the next Human Rights Council session as Special Rapporteur, I will be reporting on this issue, and I'm going to make a number of key points to states. The first is that this is a collective action problem. These are 57 states, many of whom have not been publicly acknowledged as having their nationals in the camp. So now we cannot pretend that we don't know who has nationals in the camp. We know exactly and precisely, and we also know the numbers. The mandate knows and can confirm for governments how many of their nationals are in these camps. The second point I will be making is that this is not a list any state wants to be on. This is a list of shame. This is a list that says that you have significant numbers of your women and children living in squalid conditions that meet the definition of torture under international law, and you are not doing enough to get them home. The third thing I will say to states is that there are a number of states on this list doing a really good job, doing their very best to get nationals home. And I will name those states. They include Russia and Kazakhstan. Kosovo is another. So there are states doing a good job, which tells us that the states who are not don't have a reason not to do what these other states are doing. And finally, I will underscore how precarious the situation in these camps are, how vulnerable these children are, and that there's a fundamental legal obligation by states, as well as a moral obligation, to get these children and their mothers home.
Thank you very much, Fionnuala Ní Eolaithín. Do you have any other contexts where there are third country nationals being held in this way?
So we don't have anything like this situation anywhere in the world. We have seen ad hoc situations in other countries where third country nationals are held during armed conflicts or situations of violence. But the scale of this challenge is singular, which is why it requires a collective solution. The only example that I can think of that has some parallels is the situation in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where for 20 years almost, we've had individuals, third country nationals, held without trial, without their consent, in situations that the Special Rapporteur for Torture has defined as continuing and ongoing torture because of the specificity of the conditions in which these detainees are held, and with no end in sight, an arbitrary detention without any end, a Kafkaesque situation that is really unjustifiable by any rule of law measure. So that's the analogy we can make in terms of a recent practice, a practice that is still ongoing, that speaks to the conscience of humanity in the same way that the camps of Al-Hol and Raj should also speak to the conscience of humanity.
If these 57 states, this list of shame that you say, continue not to take back, they're just a handful, you say, of their nationals who are stuck in these camps and have been for a very long time. What's the risk in future, this new generation of children, should they get out? Presumably they're going to be very disenchanted and disenfranchised.
So one of the abiding kind of realist things that comes out of this situation, and we see this being stated by many intelligence agencies and security experts, is that the argument for repatriation is not just a human rights argument, it's a security argument. The long-term maintenance of this group in this setting and the kinds of conditions in which they are forced to subsist are the perfect conditions conducive to terrorism and further extremism. These kinds of conditions are the kind of petri dish in which violence and anomie and exclusion and the feeling of outsiderness grows and thrives. And so you are in fact facilitating a generation who will be prime in a way for the kinds of violence that they have experienced their whole life, meted out by both state and non-state actors, and the structural violence that's being forced upon them by their states of nationality. So from a security perspective, as we've known, Syria and Iraq, that region has posed enormous security challenges for the world. And the long-term security solution here is to bring individuals home, punish and prosecute them if they've committed crime. This isn't a get out of jail free card. If someone is responsible for serious violations of international law, then they should be prosecuted to the full and fair extent of the law. And those who have not, particularly the children, should be put back into national systems. We have, in many of these countries, some of the most sophisticated systems for child welfare, for child support, for the reintegration of children. And we've done this before. Think of the conflicts in multiple parts of the world where we have reintegrated children supporting armed forces or associated with armed forces. This is not something we don't know how to do. The despair here is the persistent unwillingness of a core group of states to live up to their international responsibilities at the same time as they preach international human rights responsibilities to other states.